Hi there, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. Yes, we are still in the COVID-19 period, and goodness knows where it's going to end. So I've been digitizing some of my 78s and receiving MP3s from various places, so I've got lots of things I could play you. Today is particularly horrible because I'm stuck in, not just because of restrictions, but because the weather is appalling. It's something like 95 degrees or in centigrade 35, and I hate hot weather. Anyway, never mind, let's distract myself. I'm going to begin with English musical. George Henry Eliot, for some reason, liked just to be known as G.H. Eliot, and he became very famous in Great Britain. He was actually born in Rochdale in 1882. His family moved to the USA for a while when he was four, and he started being on stage while over there. He even blacked up for the first time when he was nine, and obviously wouldn't have understood what minstrelsy was all about back then. They returned to Great Britain in 1901, and he continued to perform, and he decided, since somebody called Eugene Stratton had a career blacking up, he would follow in his footsteps. Remember, in those days, black people in the UK would have been as rare as hen's teeth and would have been regarded as exotic foreigners rather than any threat, or there was no hatred, in other words, towards, there was no real racialism here the way there was in the USA. So blacking up in the English music hall was just a novelty thing, and he certainly didn't dress up in sort of field workers' clothes. Far from it. He always appeared in either white or pearl grey frock coat, top hat, cravat, cane, the lot. He looked really, really posh. He just happened to have a black face, or he put on a black face. And the songs he sang were certainly, again, not making fun of black people's accents. In fact, I don't think he ever really adopted American accents when he sang. But he sang nostalgic songs for the bit of the USA where he was supposed to have come from. And this is one of them. It's called Down Home in Tennessee. It was recorded right in the middle of World War I in March 1916, when he would have been in his 30s. So I'm not quite sure why he wasn't in the army, but he obviously wasn't. He had a really long career and was honoured with a This Is Your Life program when he was 75. So he was popular throughout his career. Obviously, he was at his peak in the early days, but everybody loved him. And as I say, his songs were things like The Silvery Moon, Sue, 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 and Lily of Laguna, things like that. Nostalgic, romantic song. This song, Down Home in Tennessee, must have been a big hit, as you'll hear later on in my podcast. But for the moment, let's hear G.H. Eliot singing it himself way back in World War I.
I'm so happy, oh so happy, don't you envy me? I leave today at 3 for sunny Tennessee. Dad and mother, sis and brother, waiting for me there. And at the table next to Mabel, there's an extra tier. Back home in Tennessee, just try to picture me right on my mother's knee. She thinks the world of me. All I can think of tonight is a field of snowy white. Bam, joe's ringing, dark is singing, all this world seems bright. The roses round the door make me love mother more. I'll see my sweetheart more, and friends I used to know. Why, they'll be right there to meet me. Just imagine how they'll greet me when I get back, when I get back to my home in Tennessee. At the station, my relation, all will be on hand. With a hometown band, the best band in the land. Hezekiah and Mariah, they'll hand me a laugh. And my old dad will be so glad he'll kill the fattest calf back home in Tennessee. Just try to picture me right on my mother's knee. She thinks the world of me. All I can think of tonight is a field of snowy white. Banjos ringing, dark is singing, all this world seems bright. The roses round the door make me love mother more. I'll see my sweetheart grow, and friends I used to know, why they'll be right there to meet me. Just imagine how they'll greet me when I get back, when I get back, when I get back to my home in Tennessee.
G.H. Eliot was known for years as the chocolate-colored coon. The word coon now is, of course, very offensive, but again, back then, it was no more offensive than calling somebody black today. It was just a word which meant somebody was black. Things change. Well, at this point, I normally play you some jazz, and I certainly never thought I'd be able to play you any bossa nova, because bossa nova really kicked off just as the 78 was going out of production. But no, I found one. I recently got a recording of Ana Lucia, one of my favorite bossa nova singers, maybe not one of the most famous ones. And she made an LP in 1961, and on it was a very famous song called Agua de Beber, which is, in fact, the A side of this 78. But I'm going to play the B side, which is called So Amor en Minha Vida, which means, as far as I can make out, the only love in my life. She's one of my favorite bossa nova singers. I first came across her by accident when I found her possibly most famous LP here in the Portobello Road market for 6 pence, would you believe? And I was struck with her voice and her phrasing and everything. And she must have been born around the early 40s, and she died in 2011. This was her then at the beginning of her career. She had learnt Agua de Beber by going to the home of Vinicius de Moraes, or was it Don Jobim? Anyway, they were both there, and they showed her how to phrase and spent the day drinking whiskey and singing, which is sort of normal Brazilian behavior as far as I can make out. Anyway, she's wonderful. This is a 78 of Bossa Nova made in 1961, and I recommend that you listen very carefully to this wonderful singer, Ana Lucia.
Sim, você viu o pranto no meu rosto e sorriu. Hoje eu vejo em seu olhar tristeza e solidão, e não quero zombar. Não, eu não sei pagar ingratidão com ingratidão. Só amor em minha vida, amor por toda a vida em meu coração. Thank you. vento no meu rosto e sorriu. Hoje eu vejo em seu olhar tristeza e solidão, e não quero zombar. Não, eu não sei pagar ingratidão com ingratidão. Só amor em minha vida, amor por toda a vida em meu coração, coração.
Ana Lúcia, the wonderful Ana Lúcia, one of the last people to be issued on the 78th, I suppose. Incidentally, like many Brazilians, her full name was far more complicated. Her full name was Ana Lúcia Buschelli da Silva e Souza. How about that for a name? That wouldn't fit on the average billboard, would it? Well, now, as usual, we shift gear completely. We're going back, 35 years or more, and we're moving to the genre of grand opera. I actually played a recording of Tom Burke some time ago, but since I haven't done for some time, let me tell you a little about him. Thomas Aspinall Burke was born in Lee in Lancashire, of Irish descent. He was the eldest of 9 children, and the family were poor. Burke's father was a labourer in the coal mines, and his mother stayed at home to look after the family. At an early age, it was obvious that the boy was musical, but the thing in those days was, the tradition, I suppose, was for people working in the mines and their relatives to learn to play a brass instrument and join the local brass band. In this case, the Lee Borough Brass Band is where he learnt to play the cornet and was soon promoted to first cornet player. And indeed, in Crystal Palace, where there was a big competition, he won the silver medal for the best individual cornet soloist. Also during his teenage years, however, he joined the local church choir. How often is that the opening of an operatic career? Well, at some point, a local music society was presenting Handel's Messiah, and the tenor they'd engaged didn't turn up, and Tom Burke, young Tom, was able to substitute for him. He knew the entire role. It must have been around this time that he heard that the great Caruso was going to sing, of all places, in Blackpool, and the story is that he actually walked there to be able to afford a ticket and heard Caruso, and then, of course, walked back again. However, he was soon discovered, and as usual, money was found to help him be trained, and he trained in London and later even in Italy. But just as he was going to sing in Italy, World War I happened, he was called back, and rather than joining the army, he was asked to perform in charity concerts until the end of the war. His debut, of all places, was at the Royal Opera House in front of King George V as Rodolfo to Nellie Melba in La Boheme when the Opera House reopened in 1919. Not a bad beginning. He also sang in Rigoletto, Madame Butterfly, and various other operas. He toured the USA in the early 20s after accepting an offer from William Morris, who was more of a, what should we say, vaudeville producer, and indeed he had to perform in vaudeville bills, and he sang operatic arias, ballads, Irish folk songs, and went down pretty well. He then went on to spend 4 years in Washington, again topping the bill in variety shows. However, he was able to return home to Great Britain in 1927, again performing at the Royal Opera House. And so his career should have developed. But the story goes that he was rather too fond of alcohol, and he gradually got a reputation for being A, unreliable, and B, occasionally even trouble. Which is a shame, because he was one or two really great British tenors, despite the rather unromantic surname. Nevertheless, he did gain the nickname the Lancashire Caruso. He really didn't sound like Caruso, but he did have aspects of an Italian tenor about him. I'm going to play you a recording made in July 1925. It must have been one of the very, very first electrical recordings made by Columbia. This would have been a brand new thing then. Until then, people had been singing into horns. They only gave him a piano as accompaniment. I would have liked to have heard him sing this aria with a full orchestra. Nevertheless, with his voice very exposed with just the piano, he makes a pretty good fist of this famous aria from Tosca. So without more ado, I give you Thomas Burke in 1925. Now we go back a further decade, back into the acoustic era and back to English Music Hall. This is a follow-up to the first track I played before. It will be performed by a gentleman called Ernie Main, who was born in Devon, but by the time he was 10 was living right in the middle of London. When he grew up, he weighed about 20 stone and was huge and sang comic songs. His voice wasn't exactly mellifluous, but it was fine for shouting out musical songs, comic ones, and he enjoyed a fair measure of success. I may be wrong about this, but I've got a feeling he sometimes sang songs that were written by Sam Mayo, whom I featured last time. Well, this time he is singing on a winner record of 1916, a parody. In those days, copyright was much looser and you were much freer to sing parodies than you are today when you've got to get all sorts of permissions. What is a parody? A parody is you take a song and you write different words to it, sometimes vaguely referring to the original lyric, as in this case, in a way. It's something I am always going on about, and that is that a song is the melody and the chords, not the melody and the chords and the words. The words are the lyric. And anybody, or just about anybody, on hearing this will say, oh, that's the same song, but with different words. Nobody would say it's a different song. On the other hand, if you heard something the other way around, where it's the same words but a different melody, most people, if not all, would say, oh, those are the same words, but fitted to a different song. Well, I've just had my little rant about what is a song. This is a parody. Somebody has taken the song about Tennessee, which must have been very successful because this recording is only about 3 months after the other one. And what has been done, and I don't know who wrote it, is that they've taken the tune and they've written two verses of words. The first one, instead of being about Tennessee, it's about going back to Bermondsey. And the second verse, since this was in the middle of World War I, is about going back to Germany. So let's listen finally to Ernie Main, recorded just a few months after the original G.H. Eliot version in October 1916. And this on the label says Tennessee Parody, which is pretty much what it is. It's interesting to play the original version, very sentimental, if you will, and then playing this Mickey take of it. Ernie Main, Tennessee Parody, October 1916.
Discovered, can't be smothered, blurted out I must. If I keep it as a secret, I shall surely bust. Next door at 43, Mrs. Jones invited me to have a cup of tea. She's got no gin, you see. And so I said, most polite, now where you with last night? Excuse me winking, but I'm thinking things ain't quite all right. Her husband at the war, and on her clothesline I saw the shirt of a slur-jow. But kept he used to now, and if her husband should meet him, just imagine how he'll greet him. He'll get his own back when he gets back to his home in Bermondsey. Every morning we get warning through the daily press that things are in a mess and bungled more or less. No take internment, our discernment proves that we are all wrong. All the camps are filled with them whose life is just one song. We three on the knees, then spend our LSD upon the enemy in ease and luxury. They go to bed every night wrapped in sheets of snowy white. Beer and baccy make them happy. All the world seems bright, but I wonder if our boys are sharing similar joys. Well, dear, to quote John Bull, no notes are three bags full. And later on when we beat them, well, they'll miss the way we treat them.
Well, now we're going to return to Brazil. At the same time that I acquired that recording of Ana Lúcia, I also acquired this recording of somebody called Doris Monteiro. Now, I flatter myself that I'm a bit of an expert on Brazilian popular music. But of course, that's nonsense. I suppose I know more than a lot of foreigners do, but compared to any average Brazilian, I don't know that much. And I'd never come across Doris Monteiro. This is a recording made in the 1950s, 1955, so again, pretty late, 78. When I rang up my friend in Brazil, Zuza Homem de Melo, who is an absolute top music critic, knows everything, it seems to me, he went, Doris Monteiro, my friend. Well, the good news is, unlike most of the people I talk about on here, Doris Monteiro, who was born in 1934, her full name, relatively short for a Brazilian, being Adelina Doris Monteiro, she's now 86 and still singing, and apparently in pretty good voice. Her career began in 1949 when she was heard on the radio somewhere, and as a sort of student, she was invited to sing on a radio station called Radio Guanabara, and later moved to Radio Tupi, where she was a fixture for 8 years. And she gradually became more and more famous and had sort of hit records on 78s and so forth. Her main career seems to have been in the 50s and 60s, but she was still recording in the 70s and 80s, and even to some extent in the 90s. She appeared in a couple of films, and all in all, she's had a pretty good career, and as I say, she's still active right now at the age of 86. And she turns out to be a pretty good singer. So, with that being the sum knowledge that I have about Doris Monteiro, I will let you listen to her singing, and it's a very nice experience. Doris Monteiro.
Desde que te encontrei, nunca te dei a menor atenção. Passavas por mim como a sombra da noite fugaz, como a nuvem que o vento desfaz no horizonte sem fim. Por que razão eu que nunca pensei em te querer, porque nunca te vi? Agora afinal que sei que te perdi, meu amor, não me esqueço de ti. Agora afinal que sei que te perdi, meu amor, por que razão não me esqueço de ti?
And to close, we're going to have a truly great opera singer. When we think about Italian basses, we always think of Ezio Pinza, one of the great basso cantatis. He was born in 1890. The gentleman I'm going to play you now must have been a huge rival for him at the beginning of his career, because he was 10 years senior to Pinza. He also outlived him. He lived to the age of 81. Although he began as an apprentice printer, he had always sung, and first of all as a boy soprano in various choirs, even the Sistine Chapel. Obviously, when his voice broke, that put an end to that sort of career. But when his voice recovered, it was obviously something special. At first, they weren't quite sure whether he was a baritone or a bass, but he was really more comfortable with the lower tessitura, even though he had a fine
upper register. He made his professional debut in 1903 in Donizetti's Linda di Chamonix as the prefect, and gradually he added various roles to his repertoire. Bellini, Verdi, all sorts of things. He even sang Wagner at some point. He toured the Netherlands in 1905 and was quickly invited to all the major opera houses of Italy, finally reaching La Scala in 1907 under Toscanini. Naturally, somebody of this talent was soon spotted by recording companies, and he made his first records as early as 1907 and 8 for Phonotypia. But he was still going in the late 20s and early 30s, by which time he was recording for Columbia, and as you'll hear, certainly survived long enough to make records with a new electrical process. In 1931, he even recorded the complete Mephistopheles for Columbia in Italy. However, during the 30s, his voice gradually deteriorated, just as Pinza's was to do later on, and he retired just before World War II. As I said, he died in Rome in 1961. What we're going to hear today is a bass aria from one of Verdi's early operas, Nabucco, and as you'll hear, he really was a magnificent singer. Nazareno di Angelis, possibly forgotten these days, but undeservedly so.
Hey!
And now finally we come to my track. Before I do, let me update you on my life. As if lockdown isn't bad enough, we are experiencing in London one of those dreadful weeks of hot weather that I so loathe in August. It's up above 90 degrees or in Celsius over 35, and it's sort of humid and airless and horrible. I'm not even going out, and it's sort of rotting my brain, I'm sure. Well, what can I say? I have had an interesting time since I last spoke. I was asked to join the Recording Academy. I didn't know what this was, but I said thank you very much and joined. It turns out to be the organisation that awards Grammys. And not only that, but I joined at the time when we can submit records to get a Grammy. And I had one that jumped through all the hoops so that I could submit it for consideration. I put it in for jazz vocal. So, who knows, I could even win a Grammy for my CD that I put out last year, which by the way is on Spotify and is called Songs from a Basement. I'm actually quite proud of that one. Have a listen. Well, apart from that, let me say, as usual, this podcast isn't listened to by enough people. It's not so much me as the wonderful singers and musicians that ought to be heard by vast numbers of people. So do your best to spread the word. And also, as I am often saying, I have doubles which need a home and I need more space. So if you feel like becoming a 78 record collector, or you know somebody who already is, please send them in my direction, spats47@ntlworld.com. Well, what am I going to give you? I've written two songs during lockdown. One was, as far as I know, only the second Valentine's Day song of which I'm aware. And the other one is the one I'm going to give you today, which is a little harmless, not particularly memorable song, which is called One Day Very Soon. And its subtitle is The Lockdown Song. The relevance to lockdown, I think you'll understand when you hear the accompanying lyrics. And without more ado, I shall just say, until the next time, as always, au revoir. One day, very soon, once again I'm gonna hold you. My arms will enfold you. One day, very soon. Someday, very soon, once again you're gonna kiss me. Say how much you've missed me. Someday, very soon. Now you're far away, can't wait every day to see your face online. But it can't compare with having you there to hold your hand in mine. One day, very soon, once again, no stormy weather. All songs sung together in tune. One day, very soon. Soon, once again, no stormy weather. All songs sung together in tune. One day.